What's up, everyone, and welcome to episode 40 of the Promptly Written Podcast, where every month we take a writing prompt provided by you, write stories based on it, then break them down for you. My name's Matt Shigerik, and with me, as always, Ian Lewis. What's up, Ian?
Hey, what's up, Matt?
Not much. It's been a month, man. It's just like, I don't know. It feels like it's been nonstop. I'm kind of looking forward to it, though, because usually, and say this hesitantly because, you know, shit's been crazy the past couple of years, but usually towards the end of the year, I kind of get like a little bit of lull and like things kind of die down a little bit at work and it lets me like catch up on some stuff. You experience anything like that?
It just depends on where the project work falls. This year I've actually got, you know, a system going live 1/1/2022. So things might be ramping up a bit for me.
Yikes. So like seriously, January 1, a new, oh man, that could be a damper on your holidays. Is that going to mess with your time off or anything like that? Like, are you going to?
I hope not. I mean, I've got all my PTO put in, and being that I'm working from home, it's like something pops up, you just walk upstairs and get remoted in again kind of a thing.
Yeah. It just sucks though, because like as convenient as working from home can be sometimes, it almost makes you more accessible because people know that if you can do everything at home, then maybe if it's like 7 o'clock at night, you still might be able to do something. You know what I mean? And it's like you still need to kind of have that work-life balance in there.
That is true.
Yeah. So anyways, let's see here. What do we got on the agenda for today? Well, you know what? Before we start, I think this has been kind of like a running theme for the past couple of months, and we know you finished your first draft of the next, and you titled it, and I saw the Instagram post, and the title's failing me now, but the next Villains. In the Reeve series, what's it called?
Yes. Villains.
Villains, yes.
Yes.
So are you editing yet, or what's going on there?
I have not started editing. I'm thinking probably next week I'll start. The reason why I'm not editing yet, we will discuss in a moment.
Ooh, okay.
One of our discussion topics.
Nice. So before we get into the like our main topics for today or whatever, just there's one little piece of follow-up. Back in May, the Avon Lake Public Library like invited you to take part in their Read, Write, Local Unbound web series, which I'm pretty sure is like a virtual version of the author events that they used to hold on site like pre-COVID. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And then you were gracious enough to share your part of your time with me and in the podcast, and we were able to talk about that and like our writing process. And I'm still yet to watch the entire thing back because I hate watching myself. But this would be a great way for everyone to kind of get a little insight into us, especially your work and what you have out there so far. So if you guys didn't have a chance to watch it live, now it lives on forever via YouTube. Links down in the show notes.
Yeah, I recall that being a good conversation, although I have yet to go back and watch it too.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I went and clicked on the link just to make sure everything was working before I, you know, committed to putting it in the show notes. And there was a part where I clicked on and I was watching myself talk, and I kind of like, I must have been leaning on the arm of my chair, and I kind of put my hand on my face, but it pulled my eye down. So I had this like real droopy eye. And I sat there for like a minute while I was talking with this droopy ass eye. I'm like, oh man, like I gotta remember like the next time I'm live on the internet, like maybe you should just like refrain from touching my face altogether.
It's more authentic that way.
I guess so, but it's just like, I don't know, felt like an idiot, but you know, whatever. But yeah, again, links in the show notes. Go check it out. I also remember being a pretty good time. So let's see here. This is kind of my main topic for today, and I don't know. It's more of like a tale of self-discovery than like a question or whatever. But like, my daughter and I have both been getting into vinyl lately, and we go out every now and then and we look through like bargain bins at used record stores looking for stuff. And I usually look for like weird soundtracky type stuff that I can throw on while I'm writing. And I found a couple, but I couldn't decide which one I wanted to use to write this month's story. So I threw up a post in the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/group/pwrittenpod. And I asked for the listeners which album I should write my story to. And we'll talk a little more specifically about that when I get to my story later on. But When I put the post, I mentioned that we needed to record the following week, and you responded with, like, dude, we're recording next week? What happened to September? And I was like, for real? Like, that whole month just, like gone. And I got very little done. And I was pretty motivated after our last conversation. Like, I'd gotten back into the flow and was feeling my story that would become the novel. And, yeah, I was thinking about it, and I was trying to figure out what happened. And the only thing I could really come up with was that, like, work was super busy for me. And a bunch of events to do, at a big video project due. And when that all got hectic, I think it drained my energy level more than usual. And, you know, I'm usually tend to, like, make the evenings my creative time. And I was so drained that there was no energy left for anything. And I wanted to ask you, because I know that you've mentioned before you, like, write during your lunch breaks and you write during the day. And to me, that seems like it would be, like, insanely hard to, like, flip your brain between those two modes, like work mode and creative mode. So do you ever run into periods where work just gets super hectic that when you do go try to be creative, like, nothing's there?
Not really. The only time that I feel like my creativity is impacted is if I get really stressed out by something. So I'm not usually one that gets, you know, I don't get, like, panic attacks or physically, you know, impacted by stress, really. Mm-hmm. I can usually maintain some semblance of balance, but if something is sort of above and beyond the normal stressors, you know, that sometimes that will, you know, I won't have the motivation to write in that sense.
Gotcha. Yeah, it was just, I don't know. I'm hoping that it was a fluke. And, you know, I mean, it's no secret, like, for the past year, like, I've been kind of, like, less than motivated to do anything, like, outside the podcast, really. And I'm trying to work through that. And I thought I was there. And then it's just like another obstacle gets thrown up that you weren't expecting. And then, like, it just, I don't know, it just seems so frustrating. We'll talk about a couple things. I keep saying we're going to talk about shit later, but we're going to talk about a couple things later that might be able to help me along. But I was just curious, and it was just, I don't know. I'm almost glad that September is behind us. You know, I think Billy Joe Armstrong said, you know, wake me up when September ends, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely like that. Evaporated for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe I'll wake up come October 1. Oh man, that was super cheesy, man. Like, how lame was that? I'm gonna leave it in. I need to at least I can be self-aware of being lame. All right, so you threw this next topic up in here, and I'm gonna let you introduce it, because I'm interested, because I think I have a feeling I know where we're going, but I'm not quite sure. So why don't you tell us what's going on here.
So a topic popped up this week, and it was with regard to, from the reader perspective, readers apparently, you know, when you're talking about a series, they enjoy between books, you know, they might have a gap between reading, you know, if it's an ongoing series and it's not available immediately, they might have a gap between reading the books, and they appreciate having sort of like a what happened thus far type of section at the beginning of a book that kind of refreshes their mind and brings them back up to speed with regard to what happened in the prior book. And I had never done that before. It was something that I was always, you know, somewhat, I guess I'd never seen it done, for one. You know, there's different ways you can approach it as an author, of how you deftly remind the reader about what happened before without kind of just plainly stating it all again. And I always felt like I'd be treating the reader as if they were stupid or dumb if I did that, if I put, like, this type of section in the book. But there was such a strong response in the thread that I was reading about how helpful readers find that, and I was like, huh, maybe I should tackle that for the next Reeve book, and kind of have a little section in there that sort of summarizes the first book. So if you haven't, you know, read it in 2 years or something, then you'd kind of be able to hit the ground running again without having to reread the first book. So that's kind of why I haven't started my edit yet. This whole past week I've been focused on just kind of writing that synopsis so that it's not bloated, but it gives you all the requisite detail and the reminders of the main characters so that you can hit the ground running with book two.
Yeah, you know what? I was actually thinking, like, as soon as like I knew that you were gonna, you know, be ready to release the next book, you know, when the release was coming up, I was thinking that I should probably read From Legend again, just to catch me up. And I actually appreciate what you're doing for me here, because now I don't have to go back and read the whole book. Not that that would be like a waste of time or anything, but it's just like, I think it is beneficial, and it kind of leans back to, like, you know, television before they just dropped the entire damn season on Netflix on one day and you could just watch all 10 episodes. But I mean, from week to week, they would give you like a quick recap, like, here's what happened last week, here's where we left our characters, you know what I mean? And I think that might be a nice little addition to the beginning of the book. Now, just out of curiosity, like, how long, like, do you think this thing's going to be? I mean, is it just going to be like a quick couple, like, few paragraphs? Or are we talking, like, is it going to be like a chapter length? Or
no, it's like in Word double spaced right now. It's probably a page and a half, maybe 2 pages.
Okay.
It's not long. It's pretty succinct. Because, like I said, I don't want it to be sort of like a big slog for the reader. You can always skip it. You're not obligated to read it. But a lot of times, like, preface type material that is in a book, you know, sometimes readers tend to skip over. And so I wanted it to be light enough that, like, if you wanted to read it and needed it, you could get through it pretty quick and not kind of be lost in the minutia.
No, I think that's a good idea. I think, and then, I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's always going to be there too. So, like, even if the reader does skip it initially, and then they get into like the first chapter or two and they're like, wait a second, like, what's going on? Or what, like, you know,
yeah,
they can just go back real quick.
Sure, they can do that. I think the other thing too that it does is it sort of maybe reframes things from the author perspective. So if there were things you didn't understand or maybe interpreted incorrectly about the first book, because there is a certain element of mystery about it,
mm-hmm.
that maybe it re-solidifies things for you and casts things in, you know, in a way that, like, hey, this is what you should have taken away from the first book, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, it maybe will underpin the second book a little bit better because of that. But the one thing this whole topic kind of got me kind of wondering about is, like I said, I had never done this before because I felt as though I was going to be treating the readers if they were dumb. But that made me think, well, I've made a huge assumption about who my reader is. And then I thought, well, maybe it's more of an assumption about who I want my reader to be. And so I was thinking that, you know, anyone who's going to be reading my stuff has to really like it, otherwise they're probably not going to be reading it. And so I'm imagining a reader that's really engaged and remembers the characters and the story sticks with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go to the next book, they still remember the first book well enough and they're invested, you know, because I'm thinking about things that I like, you know, the things that I really, really like. Like, I don't need the refresher because I hung on to it. But I look back to a review I got from on From Legend from I don't know, he is some guy starting out as a YouTube book reviewer, and he completely ripped it to shreds. But what was so frustrating about his review is that it was clear that he had either skimmed the book or just had the inability to read with any level of nuance. Like, he just, it was a very blunt kind of a reading, and he was either disingenuous or, like, he was just like one of these readers that just, like, consumes, doesn't really pay attention, rips through things, and, like, just gets things at a surface cursory level. And there's a lot of readers like that, you know, who just read book after book after book and don't take time with it, and just, like, they have a two-read pile that's a mile long and, like, or a mile deep, and they just rip through books and, like, they only get really the top level of it. I'm like, you know, I never think of my readers that way, and I have no idea who my readers are in some sense, but I never write books with that person in mind, and I wonder, like, does that impact my whole writing approach completely, that I only have a certain type of reader in mind, you know?
You know, so I have a couple of things that I want to say. One, I think in some way I'm kind of the reader that you just described. Like, for whatever reason, I would say most of what I read, like, I'm into, like, I'm completely absorbed in it, like, while I'm reading it. But then as soon as I'm on to the next thing, like, usually, like, very little sticks with me unless it's something that like I was really like passionate about liking or whatever. Like, so even when we read stuff or do things for the podcast, I have to do it close to the time when we record. Otherwise I forget about what I wanted to say. Like it doesn't stick with me like that. So just personally from like a reader perspective, I appreciate what you're trying to do because it'll just spark the memories that I need to continue to move forward into the second book. But the other thing that I wanted to mention is it's kind of like I kind of ran into stuff like this while I was going to school, and I had other people, you know, critiquing my work or whatever. And I think some of this might be a little different because I feel like one of the biggest negatives to working with other writers in like that intimate of a space is that the writers are trying to impress other writers. So it's like, dude, look at how good I write. And you're like, ha, 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 look at all these flaws I found in your writing. I'm a superior writer, you know? And it's just like a lot of like, you know,
it's
just, yeah, but it's just like a lot of times you would get, like I would get a criticism and I would be like, well, fuck them. They don't understand what I'm trying to do, you know, whatever. If they would really take the time to pay attention and read what I'm doing here, they would see the genius that is my art, you know? And then you sit there for a second and then I'm like, well, now maybe two people or something shared that opinion or three people shared that opinion. It's just like, so now is it their fault or am I not doing a good enough job of conveying what I want to convey so that they're absorbing it correctly, you know what I mean? And then there's just a lot of back and forth, but when it comes down to it in the end, I think you need to be writing the story that you want to read, and I think worrying about like what the reader's expectations are, I think that's going to get you like just kind of messed up in the head, and then you're like, I think ultimately if you're putting the story out there that you want to be putting out there, it's going to find the readers and some people are going to like it and some people might not. And I don't think you're ever going to be able to please everyone. You know, like there's not one thing that's going to go out there that's just going to be universally liked by all unless, you know, it's got the Marvel moniker behind it.
Sure, I would agree with that. And I don't think I'm concerned with it to the extent that I would change what I'm doing. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I'm always writing, like you said, the story that I want to read in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always the side of like, you know, not that I'm putting that much effort into trying to make a living at it, but like you're in a sense, I'm still trying to write to a professional level, and you know, you what do you think about? Okay, if I did try to make this more of a thing, like, would you have to start caring more about who your audience is and more, you know, defining that better?
Yeah, maybe, but like I guess, you know, I think that would be a great question for an author that has achieved quote unquote like success at some level, like somebody traditionally published that has sold, you know, thousands of books or something, or has like a following. And then I would love to know from their perspective, like how much knowing their reader or their reader's expectations go back into their writing once, you know, a level of success has been like obtained. Because I think you see that with music, right? It's just like, I actually very recently watched Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica documentary. Have you ever seen it?
I have not. I've only seen the VH1 Behind the Music.
Okay, so they did it was Some Kind of Monster, and it was while they were making the Saint Anger album, right? Which, you know, notoriously it was like their probably least popular album, right? But like when you watch the documentary, like there were a lot of reasons that album needed to be made, and like they were really going through some shit at that time, James particularly, and fortunately for them, they were Metallica, so you can put out an album that everybody thinks sucks but still sells 30 million copies, and you know, they can come back. But if you're a band just starting out and you release a shitty album like that, or say you're a band that has like a freaking like breakthrough like first album, and then you follow it up with shit, then everybody stops caring, right? So they were fortunate in that kind of way, but it's just like it's like that with music. It's just like once the listener has an expectation of what the kind of music that you put out, Do you like any variation from that kind of formula that you've created meets criticism, right?
Sure.
Because I think, like, let's put it like, I think we both like the Foo Fighters, but there's a big difference between early Foo Fighters and the Foo Fighters today, right?
Yeah, big difference.
And but I think that they kind of naturally evolved, and I don't think it was like one day like a switch flipped and it was just like they were these two new people. I think you can see the evolution of that band over
the
series of albums, and I think that's the best way to do it, because you're keeping fans and making new fans. And while some of your, like, quote unquote old school fans might fall off a little bit, it's just like, even when you go see them live, it's a very, like, balanced mix of the old Foo Fighters and the new.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if just like, if a level of success maybe makes what the readers' expectations are like more important. Does that make sense?
Could be. Yeah, I think it makes sense.
So it's interesting. And, you know, not to keep dwelling on this, but I mean, like, look at Star Wars. So let's
that's a touchy subject, my friend.
Well, I know, but like, I'm going to try to keep it like very like non-confrontational, if you will. And we're not going to talk about George Lucas's constant tweaking. What we're going to talk about is there was three movies, right? We're going to talk about episode 4, 5, and 6. There were three movies that were well-loved and accepted. And I think there's flaws throughout all of them. I mean, the first one was slow as hell and really took us a long time to get where we needed to go. And the third one had fucking talking teddy bears. So, I mean, say what you want about the original trilogy versus the fucking like late 90s, early 2000s trilogy and then the new stuff. But this shit has been flawed since the beginning. I mean, there were talking teddy bears.
There were flaws, but I think the strength of it and what people love about it so much are in spite of the flaws. Whereas with the new stuff, the flaws are such that the strengths of it are overpowered by the flaws, I think.
So that's kind of what I wanted to get to, is I think that let's forget about 1, 2, and 3 for right now. So let's go to 7, 8, 9. I think that when those movies were coming out and being made and being produced and being written, I think there was far too much consideration, like fan consideration being taken into account. Like they were trying to appease the fans too much.
I think it was the opposite. I don't think they were trying to appease the fans at all. I think that's the mistake they made.
But here's the thing. What I was talking about earlier, there's no universal formula that is going to appease everyone, because for the people that have been watching Star Wars movies since the 70s, right? I mean, how long of a gap was there between Jedi and Phantom Menace? I mean 20 years?
20 years, maybe, almost.
So for 20 years, there was freaking people, Star Wars fanboys, like, just building in their head what they wanted to see, like, what the possibilities could be. And then we go back and we're like, oh, we're going to give you three movies before. And people were like, oh, well, these fucking suck. Like, what are you doing? And it's like, you know, Phantom Menace, I personally think is a decent movie that has probably 25 minutes of pod racing too much. and the other movies were fine. And I feel like the new movies were fine. But I think people had spent so much time building up in their head what they wanted. Like, it didn't matter what they made. Like, if they would have made
something
to
be said for expectation, you're very correct in that.
If they would have made like the movie that you wanted, like if they were like, Ian Lewis, write three Star Wars movies, and you'd be like, yes, I've been waiting my whole life to write these three Star Wars movies, you'd still have like 30 million people that are telling you suck, because it wasn't what they wanted to see. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I know. There's definitely something to be said for expectation, and when those expectations are unmet, I mean that's. Yeah. That's to a large extent what I had a problem with the prequels, is that there was a lot of it that just didn't, and I won't get into why, but just didn't match with what my expectations were. Now,
sure.
That's a me problem, right? That's not really a problem with the films directly.
You know, I come from it from like a different perspective from you, because like I'm a Star Wars fan, but I'm not like a Star Wars fan. You know what I mean? Like, to me, Star Wars universe is 9 movies. Never read the comics, never watched cartoons, never read the books, never read anything. And they weren't movies that I rewatched over and over when I was like, I've seen them a bunch, but I haven't seen them.
The original three, I love to death. I can watch them like over and over and they never get old. Like, in part of it has to do with, I think, the mythic underpinnings that resonated with 7-year-old me. Mm-hmm. That had you had those same underpinnings in another franchise, I would have probably loved that franchise instead, kind of a thing.
Sure.
I think that's why I love it. And it's not so much that the films are perfect or something, or that they don't have flaws,
right,
or whatnot. But I'm a fan in the sense that I love the original three films to death. I don't care about everything else. Like, I don't, like, the rest of it feels wrong to me for various reasons. Again, I won't get mm-hmm. into why, but
sure.
That, so it's not so much I'm a Star Wars like super fan in the sense that like I have all the merchandising and I love the whole experience front to back. It's, I am a Star Wars fan in the sense that like the Holy Trinity is those first three
fair
films
enough.
Kind of a thing. And then outside of that, I'm done.
Yeah. And like, for me personally, just because, you know, we're stating our fandoms right now, I'm pretty much fine with all of it. There's films that I prefer over the others. Like, I could probably rank them, you know, in my favorite to the worst. But like, if I'm in the mood for Star Wars and I'm like flipping through the TV and one of them's on, I don't really care which one it is. I'm going to watch it. Like, and that's just where I'm at. I'm not as passionate about it as some people. And so because there's such variances in like the level of fan, that's why I think that like, I think anybody's like, setting anything in a Star Wars universe right now is kind of being set up to fail.
Yeah, that, well, so my whole thing is like, after the first three, like telling a prequel story, okay, that's one thing, but like, mm-hmm. after what happened at the end of Return of the Jedi, there's nowhere else to go. Or if you do go somewhere else, you have to depart into another part of the universe and tell a different story with different people, because the climactic, like, pinnacle of everything that was important in the Skywalker saga was done at the end of Return of the Jedi, and anything that comes after just falls flat and does not feel as high stakes at all. It just feels forced.
I could find a feel for, you know, I definitely see where you're coming from, but
and they proved that, because all they did is the first film of the new trilogy was a retread of A New Hope, right? They couldn't come up with anything original there, and then the fact that you had to
into it.
The fact that you had to bring back the Emperor and he's not really dead. I mean, not only that's terrible screenwriting, and whoever wrote that script should never get a job in Hollywood again, but it's it completely takes a dump on the whole legacy of the original trilogy and the characters and the, you know, the what they fought for. It was all undone. Like, even Vader's, like, you know, sort of salvation at the end of Return of the Jedi completely craps on all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from.
No respect to the original material at all. It took it and treated it as if they were cheap props to be used in
you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where, you know, merchandising is part of it too. So it's just like, they could have totally put a trilogy in a totally different, you know, universe.
I don't begrudge somebody making money, but if you're gonna do it, be like, have some artistic integrity about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, all right. I think we should move on before we.
I could go on all night.
Before we have to change the title of the podcast to like
new stuff is terrible.
Yeah. So, I just have a couple of real quick things before we get to the story. By the time the next episode comes out, NaNoWriMo will already be started, I think. So I always like to just mention that and wish everybody who is going to participate a good luck. I hope you accomplish what you'd like to accomplish. I am refraining from committing this year because every year I start and every year I fail within three days. So, yeah, if you're doing it, good luck. Let us know what you're writing, you know. But I will not be partaking, and I am not even going to ask you. I know you too well right now. what I do find interesting is I think I talked a couple episodes ago about this London Writer Salon thing that I was doing. It was that Zoom call with a bunch of writers that happens every day.
Yep.
Yeah. So they're doing, they're actually thriving pretty well. They actually have four scheduled write sprints a day. It is London time, Eastern time, Pacific time, and New Zealand time, all 8 a.m. those local times. So for us in Eastern, you know, there's one at like 3 a.m., which is London time or some shit like that. I don't know. But then 8 and 11 are the ones that I usually try to get into when I do it. And then the other ones are like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So sometimes if it's like the end of the workday and like I got some time there, I'll kind of jump in on that one. But they're doing a thing that's like it's 100 days of writing to end out the year. And it started a couple of like September 23rd, I think, marked 100 days until the end of 2021. So essentially, they're just kind of like write a little bit every day. Doesn't matter, you know, just set a goal, write a little bit every day and finish out the year strong. And I haven't been able to hit every day, but I'm definitely writing more, and it definitely kind of helps for these people. So if that sounds interesting to you, they did like a little workshop that you can go watch a replay of on Zoom. I'll throw the link in the show notes, but then you also from there, you'll be able to get all their different little writing things. And I got to tell you, I really thought it was going to be weird just joining a Zoom, pointing my camera at me and like writing, but it's not for whatever reason. Just a bunch of silent people sitting there writing.
Yeah, so, it's just strange to me. It's distracting.
I really thought it was, but I kind of just like zone out. And like sometimes if I like get stuck and I'm like looking for a word or whatever, you know, I usually tend to like stare at the wall or something when I try to do that. But I've kind of like look over at the screen at the Zoom call. And if you see like, I don't know, 10, 15 other people that are doing the same thing, it's just like, like we're all in this together kind of thing. I don't know. It's like there's a weird camaraderie to it. And it's funny because the way that they structure it is like there's 5 minutes at the beginning where it's just like they kind of do like a brief intro for new people or whatever. Like, this is what we do. This is what we're about to do. And then they tell people to go into the chat and kind of like let everybody know what they're writing on, what they're working on, if you want to. And then at the 5 minute mark, you know, it's everybody goes silent. Everybody's muted and it's just writing for 50 minutes, you know, and everybody's just silent. And then at the end, they'll come back up and they'll be like, okay, put in the chat, like if you got done. And then they always like call on people. Right. And I'm like, I thought you had to like raise your hand or do something to like let them know that you wanted to be called on. But it was during one of the New Zealand ones. And like, I'm sitting there and I was still writing actually. And they were, you know, they were talking and they're like, oh, all right, let's hear from somebody. And they're like, this guy's like, you know, I want to hear from Matt. He's been like sitting here right next to me the whole time. And I'm just kind of figure out what he's doing. And I was like, I'm like looking around and I'm like, me? And he's like, yeah, you. So I he called me out. So I had to unmute myself and like introduce myself to a bunch of strangers, which sucks. But
you love doing that.
Oh yeah, but so it was just like, yeah, I was like, I'm working on this story for my podcast, and you know, oh, what's your podcast about? And I told them what the podcast is about, and they're like, oh, that sounds great. Like, throw the link in the chat. So you know, I threw the link in the chat. Like, you know, I think there was like 65 people there at that time. So hopefully a few of them clicked the link. But I thought that was going to be weird, and that wasn't even weird. So I don't know what's going on. Like, I think COVID and this whole thing has like desensitized me to Zoom, because like in Skype and Zoom, I used to be super like, I hate it even with family, you know, just like, I don't want people staring at me the whole time. But for some reason, I think we're desensitized to it now. And I actually didn't mind it. So I'm going to keep jumping in there and we'll see how this 100 days of writing goes for me.
Yeah. As long as you keep writing, that's what's important.
Well, it's just one of those things where it's just, I always regret days that I don't write, you know what I do? And I never regret a day I do. Like, I'm never like if I spend an evening writing, I'm never like the next day I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But like, if I spend like an evening like watching 6 episodes of Friends, as I do, I do wake up the next morning and be like, man, I could have done something so much more useful at that time. So I think just that realization is helping me. But man, it's been just like a freaking downward spiral for me lately, and hopefully October is like a better month than September.
Yeah, well, it's always tomorrow, new start.
Absolutely. All right, so we've kind of went on long enough here, so let's get to the stories. What's the prompt for this month?
The prompt for this month was, I think it was everything within reason, I believe.
Yes, and that was given to us by our friend Jeff Ford from World Gone Geek, as he does. And this one, you know what? I'll talk about me in a little bit. Why don't we go ahead and get started with yours here? How did this one go for you?
It turned out pretty well. I guess I'll save that comment for when we're done, but it came together pretty easy. It's not very long. It's 888 words.
Ooh, flash fiction. True kind of, flash yeah. fiction.
So it's the title is Exhaust. Timmons was at a loss. In no way did anything about the disappearance of the two women make any sense. He'd been a detective for 20 years, and never had he seen something so gruesome yet apparently personal. He exited his car in the damp parking lot, peppered with cigarette butts and litter, with night fallen like a dismal cloak over everything. Before him, the dingy, yellow-tinged light of a convenience store, a temporary respite dry and stale. He drew toward it like moth to flame. The tinkle of the bell barely registered as he opened the door and stepped inside. He zigzagged toward the coffee machine where he poured himself a large cup of burnt brew, bitter and acrid. The unintelligible murmur of a radio buzzed somewhere in the background. He stared into the black depths of the cup, wondering about motive and all that it would take to inflict such brutality on another human being. He'd ascertained that Rita Stevens, the woman whose teeth were left behind at the club, was indeed an acquaintance of Lucy Gardner, the woman whose nails they'd found. They traveled in the same circle, hung out together. At first, he suspected Lucy's husband Brett as being complicit, having conducted an unsettling interrogation with him. But now his mind considered whether the suspicious Dane character wasn't involved. The problem was Timmons had yet to identify a shred of useful information about the man, even a last name. Everything within reason. That was what his instructor at the academy had drilled into him. When running an investigation, he had to consider everything within reason. Following half-cocked theories, no matter what his gut said, wasn't likely to be a productive way of cracking cases. He needed facts to back up his hunches. The actual concrete facts he had about Dane related to his personal appearance. Approximately 6'2", dark hair, fashionable stubble, well-manicured, handsome. Lesser so was the opinion of the couple he'd interviewed at the club who insisted that Dane was a predator. Their opinion was not yet fact, but that they held one was indeed rock solid. It told him that they were repulsed by Dane in some capacity, either because he really was a scumbag, or because of some prejudice of their own. Or it all could be incidental, he thought to himself. He wandered over to the register to pay for his coffee and, at the last minute, a pack of Newports. The surly clerk, spindle-thin and hunched over a gossip rag, rang him up with the barrister dialogue. Timmons exited and stopped just outside to light a cigarette. Just the one as he summarily threw the remainder of the pack into the trash bin next to the door. Just as he did so, another man approached and entered the store. Timmons looked up to see Brett Gardner. They caught each other's glance, and then Timmons said, "Well, isn't this a coincidence?" Brett simply gave him a puzzled look. "I'm sorry?" Then he entered the store without another word. Timmons watched him through the glass of the door, struck by a mild disbelief as he watched Brett stroll throughout the store browsing the snack aisle and then the beer case. He'd acted as if he didn't recognize Timmons at all. Brett soon made his way to the register where he paid for a bag of pretzels, a bottle of Boone Strawberry Hill, and a roll of duct tape. All this went into a paper bag which he carried under his arm as he came back out. Timmons continued to gaze incredulously at Brett. Brett paused right outside the door, returning the confused look. "Do we know each other?" Dropping his cigarette, Timmons struggled for the right words, flummoxed and incensed, unsure what game was afoot. "You," he started to say. That's when the whites of Brett's eyes shone larger, and his mouth twitched in a near imperceptible way. He stepped back and began to walk swiftly toward a silver Toyota 4Runner. "Mr. Gardner," Timmons said, voice raised. "Hey, hold up!" Brett never slowed. He strode toward the SUV and opened the passenger side door. As he did so, Timmons got a brief look at the driver, a bristled young man with swept back hair. Then the door slammed, and the vehicle started backing out. Timmons ran over to his Buick and started it, gunning the motor so that the tires chirped as the car swung out of its parking space. He kept his eyes on the Toyota, lining up the bumper like a target, mentally recording the license plate number out of force of habit. Why is he running? Why the amnesia act, he thought. And could that be Dane behind the wheel? The Toyota accelerated with a burst of steamy exhaust from the tailpipe, skating through an intersection 500 feet ahead. Timmons closed the distance with both hands manhandling the wheel, certain he now had an admission of guilt, when his bumper caught the rear fender of a van that had just entered the intersection. He spun out, skidding with a green and red carousel of traffic lights in his eyes, and when the car finally rocked to a halt, the only thing left of the Toyota was the residual wisp of the exhaust. The end.
I'm so happy. Like, I don't know if you heard me, but like as soon as you said Timmons at the beginning, I was like,
I did not hear you, no.
So, okay, so that's good because it would have been distracting, and I usually try not to talk while you're reading. But I'm just so happy to be back where we're at. So for those of you who don't know, starting with the very first episode of Promptly Written Podcast, Ian and I have been kind of bouncing these characters back and forth, and we set a rule that one of us could only write after the other one has taken a turn. So I guess effectively it is now my turn. But this was fantastic. So Timmons was the primary detective investigating this case that I created in episode one. And I think let me see if I can have a real quick breakdown. I know we have it out there somewhere where I could tell you exactly which episodes all these stories are in. Episode one was me. Episode 9 was Ian. Episode 15 was me again. Episode 23 was Ian. And then I followed up with episode 31. And now you're on episode 40. So now we have each done 3.
Correct.
Timmons is the main detective on this case, and I like that the first half of this, we were just really kind of like in his head. Like we were just kind of like learning a little more about how he works and how he functions and really how he approaches the case. And I think, by the way, it was like a really great way that you worked the prompt into this. I think it was fantastic. But I really enjoy the fact that he thought he saw Brett, but what he saw was Brett's twin. I love it.
Okay, so I'm glad you caught that part. I wasn't sure if you were going to get that.
So I absolutely love that because it was perfect because, like, well, as soon as he saw Brett, I was like, oh, man, what's going to happen now? And then when he didn't recognize him, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, that's not the right Gardner. It's just absolutely perfect. And now it inadvertently, like, turned his attention toward them where he might not have gotten there otherwise, at least not right away. Like, so this is quite the twist and turn for our characters here.
Yeah, I was struggling with a way to get him on their trail. But I didn't want, you know, obviously he can't, you know, he has no reason to apprehend them yet. You know what I mean? And I didn't want to get that deep into it yet. And so I gave him their license plate number. You know, that's basically what he has to go on now, which is what you have to go on now.
Well, and I mean, there was definitely, like, even if he was completely innocent, you know, and, like, just, which we know he's not, but, like, if he was, like, you're immediately suspicious when he starts to run, right? Because sure. Timmons didn't identify himself as a police officer, right?
Right, yeah. I think the assumption maybe that I had in my head is that, you know, maybe he knows a little bit about what's going on with his brother. And sure. That, you know, maybe makes an assumption that he's speaking with somebody that has an idea of what's going on. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. So, but I think now there's definitely at least a reason to be suspicious. And now, the world, like, we can go anywhere now, right?
I mean, that's always been the case. You can go anywhere you want with it. But yeah, I feel like I opened it up a little bit, but didn't map it out for you as far as where you want to go with it.
Yeah. So like, I just spun back into the document because sometimes I don't even remember the names of the characters that I name. So Brett's twin's name is Tom. And that was, I mean, I'm assuming that was definitely, I mean, that was definitely Dane driving the car. So now it's like, where do I go is the question. Like, do I go back?
Well, the question is, do they have, trying to remember who was in the story prior to this. Was it Lucy that was?
Lucy, yes.
And they were going to take her somewhere that, you know, the question is like, is she in the back of that vehicle?
I mean, that's a great question. So it's like, I really have to go back and like just kind of like consume everything again and figure out where I want to go, because I mean I could jump right in with Dane and Tom.
You could.
You know what I mean?
You could.
I could go back to Brett and leave it alone. You know what I mean? I could do something completely different. Yeah. I love this so much. This is going to be so much fun. But at the same time, it's like whatever I do still needs to feel like conducive to the story, because like we keep going back and forth and it's definitely like a proper story. You know what I mean? So I can't go completely off left wing and like just bring somebody completely new into it without reason. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh boy. I'm really kind of excited that it's my turn, because there was a prompt a couple of months ago where I actually had a really good idea. And not only did I not write that idea, actually, I might have written the idea down, but I don't know if it's still going to hold water. I'm going to have to go back to my notebook and check it out, because I know I did write down an idea. But, you know, it's almost like a fool's errand to like write down an idea for this story, because what you just did probably changed everything that I might have had in my head already. You know what I mean?
Possibly, yeah.
So we're going to have to see. Oh my God, I'm so excited it's my turn again. Fantastic. Because you know what? And this is actually, I've been wanting to write something kind of messed up recently, but nothing has really come to terms. But like, I have the ability to be pretty messed up within this saga. So
yeah, I've left all that to you. I'm just the sober detective trying to figure out what's wrong detective, with you.
And I'm the guy ripping out body parts. So, yeah, we'll have to see, because if Lucy is in that car, I mean, it's like, I wonder what kind of state she's in. It's, I'm assuming, not good. Oh boy, this is going to be fun.
We will find out.
Well, fantastic. I really enjoyed it. The only question I have two comments. One, I did not expect him to smoke Newports.
Oh, really? I don't know anything about cigarettes.
So I don't know if that was mentioned before, but like I was a smoker back in the day, and Newports, they're so menthol-y. Like,
oh, really?
I was kind of weird. Like when I was a smoker, if I was sick, I would go buy a pack of like Marlboro Menthol Lights, because like they kind of do open up your sinuses or whatever, believe it or not. I mean, you're just inhaling menthol essentially. So it makes sense that they do kind of clear out your sinuses or whatever. But like Newports, it was just like, there was so much mint, it would like burn. Like it was,
really?
Yeah, it was like light a candy cane on fire and like inhale it. Like I mean, it was just like, it was
nuts. You can only
imagine. So, but also I was really happy that Tom was buying Boone's Farm.
Oh, I'm glad you noticed that too.
Nothing like a $2 bottle of wine, you know?
Classy.
It is. It's total classy. Yeah, it's so like I really Kool-Aid. Enjoyed that. Well done. All right. So I guess that means it's my turn. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that I did this whole little poll thing with the listeners, and I had two records, and I found these really cool records. One was like it was called Murder, Inc. And when I played it, it was like this really old, like kind of like 50s, like spy thing. Like it would like a lot of like trombone, like, you know, just like slurs and everything. And like, there would be like patters on a snare drum that were like machine gun. And I was like, man, this is kind of badass. Cause it was just like this really old school, like freaking, like it felt like, I don't know, very like 50s Private Eye to me, you know? But then on the opposite, I had found this other one. It was called Phantom of the Organ. And it was like super like old school horror. Like we're talking like black and white, like Universal Monsters. Like, I mean, it was obviously like the album cover was very Phantom of the Opera-y, but it was just this like old school like organ like silent movie horror kind of thing, and I couldn't decide which one I wanted to do. So I went to Facebook, and the winner was the murder one, which I was kind of excited about. So the kind of disappointing thing about the record was it was kind of short. like the tracks were very short, so I spent a lot of time flipping the record over. But yeah, it was super fun, and it was interesting to add this new element to the process of letting other people pick what I would listen to, and it would kind of help. So I might do that again in the future, because I think I would have gotten two very different stories based on, you know, the vibe that I was getting from either of those records. So, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and I'm calling this story Baxter right now, but it's only because I couldn't think of a better title. So in the book version of this, it might have a totally different title.
I feel like you've said that before and then you don't change it. But
I don't change it, but I'm really not happy with this title. And I just really couldn't, like, sometimes it really takes me some time to get a good title. So we'll see. Either I'll change it or I won't. But it, for right now, we're calling it Baxter. And I went a little long this month. And not like a little long, like 50% longer. Like, I think I'm at 2,800 words-ish. But it should read pretty quick, I hope.
Okay. Lay it on me.
So here we go. She walked into my life on a Tuesday. I remember this because the weekend had continued through Monday, and I had awoken in the dark after losing an entire day, trying to find my way out of the fog of a dozen gin and tonics. The day was far too young for artificial light, so I cracked the blinds enough to give me my bearings without blinding me. I shuffled across the wooden floor, doing my best to navigate the boards known to cry out when under strain. The calendar was about to flip back to one, and I was already into Dimitri for a month's rent, so I thought it best to steer clear of him, especially with nothing to replenish my wallet on the horizon. After Jade had walked out on me, I thought it would be best to simplify things and move into the office for a while until I got the hang of living without her financial support. It's funny. I never worried about finding clients while we were together. There was always someone coming through the door, charging me to confirm the suspicious extracurriculars of a romantic partner or hunt down some scalawag trying to skip out on a debt. But it never really mattered, because your day job can be for fun when you're in love with a star. But I was old news now, and when she left, the client stopped coming as well. Either crime was no longer financially viable, or it had never been about me at all. Just a bunch of star-struck fans trying to get a backstage look at the one and only Jade McDowell. If they had to throw her beau a few bucks to do so, so be it. It's thoughts like this that remind me that I shouldn't drink. I never wallow this much in my own sorrows when I'm sober, at least during the day. It's only when the darkness falls, extinguishing the light of the world and isolating me to this hole of an office, that I start to think about what could have been, the things that I could have done different to keep her from leaving. Before my left foot fell, I knew it was a mistake, but there was nothing I could do to stop it. The floor creaked out a long, waning call under the stress of my weight, no doubt alerting Dimitri to my presence. A booming voice from below confirmed that the jig was up. Baxter, I know you're up there. You better have my money. I listened as he stomped toward the interior wall and jumped as the door below me slammed. I hurried over to the corner where my blanket and pillow gave away my current situation, gathered them up, and shoved them into the cubby under my desk. I didn't think I was supposed to be living there, and I didn't want to find out one way or the other. Something large with a lot of legs scurried out of the musty corner. I tried hard not to think about where it might have been crawling just moments before. I patted my chest pocket and was relieved to find my notebook and pencil right where they were supposed to be. It was comforting to know that there were some things you could always count on. I pulled it out and flipped to a fresh page. Pick up bug spray and go hunting. I'd just given that a double underline when I heard a soft knock at the door. Not exactly the greeting I was expecting from my alpha landlord. In hopes that he was feeling somewhat sympathetic today, I kept my head lowered in shame. Much to my surprise, I found myself not looking at Dimitri's oily work boots, but a pair of attractive feet in soft white leather heels. A golden anklet caught the reflection of the hall light, and I found myself mesmerized by its brilliant shimmer. Ahem. I'm actually up here? I eventually made my way up, taking longer than a gentleman should to look a lady in the eye. The stunning face I found staring back at me wasn't angry, but flirtatious and perhaps even a bit amused. I took an extra moment to plan my opening line, wanting to be extra smooth, when the smell of body odor and grain alcohol came wafting around the corner. Dimitri didn't look too pleased to see that I already had company. Nor was he in the mood to wait in line, and tried to edge her out of the way. I'm surprised she didn't run, given how offensive he came off, but she stood her ground. She gave a strong look to her shoulder when he pushed into her, making sure none of his filth had rubbed off on her jacket. I saw him thinking about backing off, but just for a moment, as his anger was rekindled when his eyes found mine. "Excuse me, ma'am, but I need to take care of a bit of business here." I started to respond, but she spoke first. Her voice was as sweet and lovely as the rest of her. "Well, that's funny. I'm here for the same thing. What kind of business do you have with him?" The last thing I wanted her to know was that I was broke, so I made to speak up, but they were locked into each other. In that moment, I'm not sure that either of them remembered that I was even there. He looked her up and down, but not in the same way I had. It was more like he was sizing her up. He rarely ever made time for women in any capacity, but they were especially absent when it came down to his business. "Baxter here owes me $75 in back rent. $75 for this month, and..." He paused long enough to give me a sideways glance as he ran his hand through his greasy hair. "Rent is due tomorrow." I was appalled. Don't get me wrong. I know she was here to seek out my services, and I always put business before pleasure. But she hadn't slapped me yet, and that had to count for something. She removed her gloves and snapped open her purse. She pulled out 3 crisp $100 bills and passed them to Dimitri, being careful not to touch him in the process. "That should cover what he owes you, plus 2 months in advance. Now perhaps you could leave us to our affairs." He looked down at the cash in his hands. I could tell he was searching for something snarky to say, but came up short. "Yes, ma'am, of course." He looked over at me. "Baxter?" She winked at me as we watched him hunker back towards the stairs and down into his office. His door closed behind him, and I turned to find myself alone in the hall. Looking back into my own office, I found her sitting legs crossed in the chair across from my desk. I closed the door and made my way to the lamp in the corner, angling the gooseneck to make sure the light found that anklet. I sat on the corner of my desk, not wanting to let it out of my sight. I offered her a cigarette, which she refused, before lighting one of my own. I risked one more glance. Really was a honey of an anklet. "Subtlety isn't your strong suit." She adjusted herself, crossing her ankles in the shadows underneath the chair. Defeated, I slunk down behind my desk and set my smoke down in the ashtray. Curls of gray climbed through the air, creating a haze between us that had to make me look as hard-nosed and gritty as any PI out of a drugstore dime novel. I folded my hands on the desk and leaned forward, choking on the smoke that was supposed to be setting the mood. She bit her lower lip to stifle her laughter, but was enough of a lady not to call me out on it. She waited for me to break the silence. "Well, how can I be of service to you, Mrs.?" "Walker. Miss Betty Walker." My eyes lit up at the correction, and I prepared to turn the charm back on. I ran my fingers along the brim of my hat and pulled it off, spun it twice between my index fingers, and tossed it to the coat rack next to the door. Hit the lower hook and fell directly into the garbage can. She was less successful at hiding her amusement this time and giggled into her fist, trying to disguise it with a cough. I pulled out my notebook. "Practice hat toss. I'm hoping you can help me, Mr. Baxter. I recently hosted a number of guests at my home, and after the evening concluded, I noticed a priceless family heirloom had gone missing." I cut her off before she could continue. "You've got the wrong man, sweetheart. I don't waste time with petty theft. You're looking for one of those junior detectives. They're a dime a dozen in the yellow pages." "Well, that's too bad. I thought that we could come to an agreement. I'm sure that fine gentleman would be willing to return my money and resume his negotiations with you. I'll be on my way now. Good luck to you, Mr. Baxter." I watched her stand and put on her gloves. She took her time with them, obviously a work to get me to change my mind, but it wasn't happening. Not today. She turned toward the door and was halfway out when I braved one last look at that anklet before it walked out of my life forever. It was at that moment when I saw another multi-legged creature cross through the light and back into the shadows. Maybe it wouldn't kill me to hunt down a common thief. Change of pace never hurt anyone, and with 2 months of future rent taken care of, I could really fix the place up. "Wait." She looked back over her shoulder with a smirk. "Why don't you tell me a little more about this heirloom?" I flipped open my notebook. She turned and headed into the hall. "We'll talk on the way. The car's waiting downstairs." The car was a classy affair, but spoke more of old money than the glitz and glamour of the modern era that I'd been privy to not all that long ago. The interior smelled of cigars and bourbon, and the tailpipe coughed up the slightest bit of black smoke as we merged into traffic. The item I was being charged to locate was a diamond bracelet worn by Miss Walker's grandmother on the red carpet back in the good old days, before the, quote, talkies came in and ruined everything. I kept my opinion to myself and took rabid notes as she detailed the guest list, the menu, the band set list, and a gaggle of other useless information from the night in question. It became evident quickly that this case would be solved by evidence at the scene, not some nugget of information hidden in my client's subconscious. The house was an older mansion up in Hollywood Hills. It could use a coat of paint and a visit from the landscapers, but you could tell it was impressive back in its day. In any light, it was far from what I could ever hope to achieve on a detective's salary. If the exterior of the home was old and withering, the inside was young and thriving, yet a bit understated. I got the feeling that the place was dressed up more for sale than for everyday living. It was hard to believe that anything could go missing here, as one thing out of place would leave a gaping hole in the decor. We made our way down the foyer and into the great room. A baby grand took center stage, and I can imagine a group of folks in their Sunday best gathered round it, singing in unison as they would have in the days before entertainment was sent like magic over the airwaves. "Something else, isn't it?" She ran her fingers along the curves of the instrument's body. "It really is. Can I assume that this is where your guests spent the majority of their time on the night in question?" "I knew you'd be worth the money." She turned and headed south out of the room. "Let me show you where we keep the bracelet." I scribbled down a note to myself and rushed to keep up. A spiral staircase led up to a landing on the second floor. Every other stair groaned in old age, which made me feel right at home, but on second thought, would have made things awfully difficult for anyone trying to sneak around. Another note. I followed her to a set of double doors at the end of the hallway. A door closed below us, sending an echo bouncing off the aged walls. My pencil was getting a workout today. It's hard to believe anyone could get away with going unnoticed in a house so willing to expose anyone for anything at any time. I looked up to find her staring intently at me. "You're a very observant man. Do you write down everything?" "Within reason," I smiled. She returned the gesture and pushed her way into the master suite. Another showroom quality display. The room had a large oak bed frame with posts nearly reaching the ceiling, a matching chest of drawers, and a reading chair in the corner. It seemed almost out of turn for a lady who exuded so much class. It felt almost masculine. The carpet was a thick burgundy plush that flattened beneath my feet as I followed her to the dresser, leaving deep impressions in the pile that not even the lightest of children could avoid leaving. Something didn't add up here. She opened the top center drawer and pulled out a long felt case. She turned to face me, but my attention was still on the floor. "Something wrong?" "I'm not sure. Have you by any chance vacuumed in here recently?" "Why, yes, we have a woman come by twice a week. Why do you ask?" I walked over to the entrance and back to her, adding to and pointing out the tracks cutting through her plush like a plane leaving fresh wake through a clear blue sky. "Ma'am, I'm afraid your housekeeper may have erased the only evidence that could have led us to your perpetrator. Not to mention, I find it very hard to believe that anything could go unnoticed in this house." "Busted. I guess you caught me." She flipped open the case in her hands, and inside was an exact duplicate of the golden anklet that had been captivating me since I woke up that morning. She wore a devious smile on her face, and I went back and forth between it and the jewelry, trying to make heads and tails of the situation. "I told you he was good." I didn't need to turn around to identify the owner of the voice behind me. Hell, most of the Western world knew that voice, but not the way I did. Up until a few months ago, it was one I equated with love and passion. Today, I was having a hard time assigning an emotion to it. "Hello, Jade." I watched as Jade McDowell, goddess of the silver screen and my former someone, crossed the room to join Miss Walker's side. "Would you do the honors?" Betty smiled and, without saying a word, removed the anklet from the box, knelt down, and clasped it securely around Jade's ankle. "Would someone like to tell me what's going on here?" I wasn't sure what to make of the situation. It was an obvious ruse, but what was the point? "We just wanted to make sure you were okay." Jade looked troubled. Word on the street was that you'd fallen on hard times. "I'm perfectly fine, thank you very much. And I might add, wait, we?" She ignored me. "And we wanted to give you something." "Oh yeah? What's that?" Betty passed her a smaller felt box, which she handed to me. I opened it more out of curiosity than anything. Inside was a small ring with three brass keys. I looked up for an explanation. Welcome home. I thrust the box back at her. I don't need your charity. It's not charity. Just because I'm not in love with you romantically anymore doesn't mean I don't care about you. Before I could offer a rebuttal of any kind, Betty and Jade were on their way out the door, hand in hand. Speechless, I watched as the pair of anklets, worn by two of the most beautiful women I had ever seen, disappeared down the stairs. Once the door latched behind them, I set off to explore.
That was a very unexpected story from you. It really had that old detective vibe, which I liked. It just had that feel to it. And I kind of think about, do you remember in Calvin and Hobbes, there was the tracer bullet character?
Yes.
Where he's like sitting in like the little office and it's like, you know,
yeah,
this really noirish and he's got like a bottle of liquor and a pistol and he's wearing the hat and stuff. Like that's sort of like the image that you evoked in my mind a little bit.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, that's kind of what I was going for. And I'm going to be honest, this was 100% prompted by that record.
Well, right. So I was, the way you described the record, I'm like, I can totally see how that influenced the story.
And I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to see if I can find like a recording of the record that I can link to or something. It seemed pretty old and it was like one of those things where it's just, I mean, it's literally called Murder, Inc. And I don't think there's like a movie or anything associated with it. But if I can find it, I'll throw it in the show notes so you can hear it. I did put a very brief clip out on Instagram and in the Facebook group, so you can look there if you want to hear it. But it was super cool. And like, I was really struggling coming up with an idea for this prompt. And I don't know, as soon as like, it literally took like 10 seconds of that record before like I already started to build the story. It's just amazing what like music can do to inspire. It really is.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I feel it necessary. Like I put an homage to one of my favorite noir films in here, which is Double Indemnity. And
who's in it?
Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck. It also has Edward G. Robinson in it. It is my favorite. I love it so much. And when he first meets, when Fred McMurray first meets Barbara Stanwyck's character, he is taken aback by her anklet. And it is...
That was a very specific little touch in there, which you had me questioning that the whole time, how that was going to play into it.
It was kind of like a love letter to that movie, if you will. And then also, we didn't talk about it earlier, and we probably should have, but Norm MacDonald had passed away recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted about it on Twitter where, like, when I first saw the movie Dirty Work and he was doing all his note-to-self things, I started carrying around...
I was going to say there was some note-to-self stuff in there, yeah.
Yeah, I started carrying around a recorder, and I think I used to irritate the shit out of you guys, like, talking into my recorder and recording shit. But that was kind of like, I couldn't put a tape recorder. Like, I don't think portable tape recorders even existed when I wanted this to, like, set, or at least if they did, they weren't like pocketable, if you will. So like I reverted to a notebook, but I thought that it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely was going to mention that. Cause I'm like, oh, there's that note to self theme coming through there pretty well.
I will be taking notes to myself till the day I die. It's perfect. Yeah. But, I had a whole lot of fun with this and, I mentioned the title thing before we started and, I say things a lot on this podcast. Sometimes I deliver and sometimes I don't, but it's like, I always say like when I think that characters might return.
Yeah.
And I think this one maybe more so than others, even that I've mentioned before. I think, I don't know, I'm kind of like intrigued to figure out where he's going to go now or what he's going to do, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it's I think the advantage to this kind of little world you created is that it's, somewhat relatable in the sense that, like, we sort of have an idea of our mind of like golden age of Hollywood or that type of like noirish detective style kind of story, like that's somewhat, it resonates with you, even if you've never really seen, you know, a movie like that, you sort of get it. So like what I think is advantageous is that you have that as the backdrop to sort of like, you know, you don't have to work too hard to like ground the reader in your environment, but then you can do, you know, whatever you want with it, which I think you did. You took sort of that hard-boiled kind of, you know, gritty type of a environment, but then you didn't tell a gritty, hard-boiled story in the end. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's what I thought was so interesting about it, is that you kind of took the genre and sort of turned it on its head a little bit.
Well, and the one thing that I really wanted to do, and I decided to do at the end, was put the two women in a relationship, which definitely would have been taboo back at that time period. So what's interesting, and if I decide to take this further, it's like Baxter knows that the two women are a relationship, but she's in the public eye. You know, half of that relationship is in the public eye. And I'm not so sure that in, you know, I kind of had the 50s in my mind, but I guess this could be 40s or 50s.
Really? You know, I was thinking, yeah, probably earlier in 50s, but yeah, I don't know.
But I would imagine that is a relationship that, even if she wanted to make it public, it probably would have been frowned upon by those who represented her and the studios that employed her or whatever at the time. So that could create a whole other kind of conflict that might not have existed in, you know, these old detective novels or whatever. And full disclosure, anything that I know about this genre pretty much came from films. I've never read any of these like old, like,
so I want to. I have a couple on my list that I want to read, and I just have not bought them yet.
So if you think about it, shoot me those titles, because I would like
The Maltese Falcon is one of them.
Okay.
Actually, I can pull them up right now. Okay, I've got The Maltese Falcon, and which is by Dashiell Hammett. Mm-hmm. And Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler were two of the ones on my list that I wanted to read.
Maybe if we do a...
Oh, yeah, another book club episode.
Yeah, if we do a book club, maybe we can use one of those for the book club. Because Big Sleep, has crossed my path more than once. So
yeah, I don't think probably either one is probably that long, I'm guessing.
No, so yeah, we'll keep those in mind for an upcoming book club.
Okay.
Cool. Well, I mean, unless you got anything else, I think we're pretty good, right?
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up.
Sweet. Well, that was fun. Oh, real quick, you reading anything new? Because I'm not. Like, this month was a whole bust for me.
No, I'm a little over halfway through Moby Dick. It's okay. Slow going. I wanted to be done with it by now, but I just, you know, between the book and then, you know, I'm starting to the formatting for the next podcast book. You know, I just haven't had a lot of time to read.
Yeah, I haven't been reading much either. So I still have. What's the book you told me to read? Shadow of the Wind.
Yeah,
Shadow of the Wind is still like sitting there waiting for me to pick it up, and no progress since last month. So maybe by next month I'll have something new to recommend or something there. All right, well, that about does it. So we want to know what you want us to write about, and if you want to influence what prompt we write about next. The best way to do that is join the Facebook group. It's facebook.com/group/pwrittenpod. You can also follow us on Twitter or email us directly at promptlywrittenpod@gmail.com. Ian, where's the best place for people to get in touch with you?
IanLewisFiction.com.
And if you want to get a hold of me, I'm at Matt Shigerik on Twitter, or you can go to MattShigerik.com for a bunch of other ways to reach out. Our next episode will be episode 41, and it'll drop on November 1st. The prompt will be, "Oh yeah, without hesitation." And that was submitted by Jeff Ford from World Gone Geek, which makes two in a row, which means that somebody else out there has got to get in there and break this streak. But thank you, Jeff. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just plug this now. He's like right in the middle of season two of his podcast. The podcast is real. And I believe that our game nights are going to start up real soon. And I participate in like 90% of the game nights. The first one, let me double check the date real quick. I believe it's a Tuesday. You know what? Here's what you're going to do, because I can't find the date right now. go follow World Gone Geek on Twitter and Facebook or wherever, and he'll tweet out when it's going to happen. But there's a new Jackbox Games being released, and we are starting the game night with the release day of the new Jackbox Games. Just watch their social media for that, and I'll hit up ours with it too. That's it for today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts so we can help get the word out. See you next month.
Peace.